Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Paranormal Hour with Willow Cross and Tracy Ford. We are very happy to have you here this evening. We'd like to ask you to join us here at the World of Ink Network and listen to all of our shows. We have the Book Discussion with Fran Lewis, the Writing Mama Show with Virginia Grenier, The Edge with Cassandra Dane, and Right Step with R.J. Jeffries. Tonight is a special episode. It's just me and Trace. And we're going to talk about our own personal experiences and that kind of stuff. And we would love to take your calls. The chat room is open if you have any questions. Or you're welcome to call in at 714-242-5259 and tell us your own personal ghost story. Hi, Tracy.
Hey, how are you?
It's a dark and stormy night in Arkansas.
We actually are getting a break from the nasty, nasty weather here in Ohio for once.
It's really, the thunder is just booming and lightning going off everywhere. It sounds like it might have calmed down just a smidge. So if something happens and I disappear, my power's gone out, and I apologize ahead of time. Have fun without me. Hopefully you'll have lots of callers. If you don't have lots of callers, just tell everybody all about yourself.
Well, I hope that you do not go dark because I don't want to talk just about myself.
You could tell him a ghost story.
Yeah,
oh,
I could probably do that.
So
I could probably do that.
I think I know the answer to this question already because I know how incredibly busy you've been the last several weeks. But have you been on any new ghost investigations lately, or do you have any coming up?
No. No, my life is consumed by my day job at this point. However, which I know that you and I have talked about this, but we really didn't talk about the results of it. When I called you about my son and his nightmare, and
yes,
of course I don't know that it was a nightmare at this point. I'm starting to think it was a vision because he's got other stuff going on, but it's not of a derogatory nature. To let the audience know, the information that you gave me about cleansings and those sort of things were very helpful. In fact, he still keeps his Bible open at night with that, was it St. Michael's prayer?
Uh-huh.
That, yes, he keeps that open in his room. Ever since that happened. And I will tell the audience that that technique, in fact, does work. That was the first time I had ever actually used a salt bath and a salt cleansing ever in my life. And it was it really did the job. It did the trick. And definitely made him feel better. So anybody out there that's wondering about any type of cleansing techniques, I definitely would recommend the salt cleansing because it does have some validity to it.
It seems to have, a really good effect. It just sort of just clears out all the nonsense. Now, I want to say that I'm not entirely certain that that will work in absolutely every circumstance. However, it's worked for me every time I've used it. So salt is a good way to go.
Yes,
you can't go wrong.
It was
and it's
very, very good.
Well, I'm glad.
Good. And for the audience, I didn't know whether to use rock salt or regular table salt, which is why I called Willow in the first place, was to find out which was more appropriate. And that's when we got to talking about the technique and how to use it. And for his peace of mind, it was definitely worth it. I don't think that what was here was, like, I don't think there was a stronghold, and I don't think it was a very strong presence,
mm-hmm.
which I think is helpful when you use the cleansings, because, like you said, that doesn't always work. Sometimes you have to work a little harder and do different things, but this happened to work. And ironically, I don't even remember if I told you this or not, but he was sick that night. Like, when I got home, the kid was in bed. And that child doesn't stop. So for him to be in bed, it was bad. And he ended up at urgent care that night. I came home intent on doing that ritual, and I couldn't get to it until after we got back because he just was down for the count, and he ended up getting a virus, but I definitely don't think it's coincidence because none of the rest of us got sick. None of the rest of us got sick, and if it was viral, then we all should have got sick.
Yeah.
But, it took him probably about a week to feel, like, physically better. But I thought, I don't think this is coincidence for me to walk in and him be in the bed.
Well, if he'd not been getting good sleep, that's the thing. There's a lot of extenuating circumstances that can come on that aren't exactly paranormal in nature. However, they can, derive from that. If you're being woke up every couple of hours and you're not getting a good night's sleep, your immune system's going to start weakening.
Yes.
And if you're upset all the time, you might not eat enough or you might eat too much, and either one of those issues can be trouble. So I'm really glad that it worked for you. I'm really glad that it worked. And I'm glad that you were proactive about it, because a lot of people realize they have a problem, but they don't want to do anything about it, or they're afraid to do anything about it. Hitchhikers, in my experience, and by the way, guys, when I say in my experience, I'm not the end all be all of getting rid of ghost gurus. I'm not. I've just had a lot of experience with ghosts. I'm sure there are people out there whose knowledge far exceeds my own. And so I don't want you to think I'm setting myself up here as the ghost whisperer, because I'm not. But in my experience, dealing with hitchhikers is so much easier. They're so much easier to get rid of than, if you end up having a hitchhiker come home with you. They can be a pain in the butt, but they're easier to get rid of simply because they're not rooted and they're not grounded. When you move into a house that's haunted and it's a house that spirit feels they own, boy, that's a big deal. And they can be incredibly difficult to get out. I just recommend that if you're moving into some place haunted and it's not a malevolent force, you just figure out how to get along with them. Because fighting them, if they're owning the space and you're trying to own space that they own, it doesn't generally turn out so well.
No, it's not going to work.
Yeah. That's just been my experience. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get rid of them, because you can. But sometimes it's a very long, drawn-out ordeal. That's one of the things I want to talk a little bit about movies. I prefaced in Haunted One that book was probably not movie worthy, because what you see on TV and in the movies is generally so much more dramatic than what actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, I slam Paranormal Activity all the time. People get so mad at me because they love those movies, but I have lived in numerous places where I've dealt with ghosts. You know, I used to think every stinking house I moved into was haunted, and then I figured out it was me, not the houses. But
they were following you around.
And then I was like, oh, well, duh, I guess they're not all haunted. But I have moved into places where I could sense right away the mm-hmm. house on Rivermead. Oh, wait, I'm totally getting off where I was headed with this. I put in there, they're not, I am, I just totally, something sparkled, woohoo. It's not movie worthy, but it's true. And that's mm-hmm. the thing, a lot of people think that, you know, if you don't have blood running down your walls and your furniture, hence the Paranormal Activity thing, isn't, you know, stuck to your kitchen ceiling or knives aren't being thrown across the room at you, that, well, you know, it's not haunted, it's my imagination. You don't have to have blood seeping down your walls to have problems living in a house with an entity.
Right.
You don't have to
yes.
You can still get sick. You can have there's a multitude of health problems that can come up simply from not getting a good night's sleep on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's medical and not paranormal, but if the paranormal is what's waking you up with the thumps and the bangs and the doors open and shut and our little voices whispering in your ear or whatever, the root of that is paranormal, and you need to do something about it.
Right.
So, anyhow, after all that long rambling, I'm really glad that you were proactive, and of course you've had a lot of experience with this too. So, speaking of which, what a great segue that was. I want you to can we talk about that house on air? Because I want everyone to hear that story with the fire.
Yeah.
Because I want you to tell them that the story that you told me on the phone, because, first of all, I'm dying to go there, and secondly, I had goosebumps everywhere, and I think they'd like to hear it. So let's hear about that house.
That house right now is reduced to rubble still. They've not been able to clean anything up, but there is a historical building, was a historical building in the hometown that I live in, and it's called the Emmett House, and it was over 100 years old. It was started by, I believe, James Emmett, and I think it started out, if I've done the research, it started out with a gateway to the Erie Canal, and I mean, this building has been around. I mean, it was a historical site. It has been like a hotel. It has been a restaurant. It's went out of business. It's gone back into business. It's went out of business again. This time around, when they started the business back up, it really did well. The person that owned it really did some spectacular things. She updated. I was not able to go in it. I actually intended on going in it, but I was kind of waiting for things to die down because she was packed. She had the bar redone. She had the restaurant redone. She even rented out space to like a dance area. There was a bakery. There was a boutique. She was really going to make a go of this, and I really felt like it was going to be successful. back in 2000, I want to say it was 2012 maybe, there was one evening that a couple of friends of mine and we were going to go to the Emmett House. They were going to have a paranormal conference there. Well, they canceled it. And it when we drove past it, I knew I wasn't supposed to go in there. Like, I had been in there to pick up food once before, but it was before I decided to become spiritual or tap into whatever. And I didn't really feel anything. It just creeped me out. And I never got the opportunity to go back in there, but something kept telling me I wasn't supposed to go back in that place. Every time I would drive past it, you would just feel like you were being stared at. And, in fact, the upper portion of the building, the previous owner had put mannequins in the windows because there had been reports and complaints from the public that they would drive by and there would be someone standing up in the window. And there would be no one in the building, like it was when the building was vacated and there was nobody there.
Oh, wow.
A paranormal Go ahead.
Do you know his reasoning on what the mannequins were for? Was that just peace of mind for the public?
Yes, peace of mind for the public. And the thing is, there was a paranormal group out of southwestern Ohio that was doing a YouTube series and had done several paranormal investigations in this building. And they had posted the results online. So it was a haven for paranormal activity. And, I mean, these people were, like, making shows about this building.
Oh, wow.
It was a big deal. And when I published my first book in 2013, my very first photo session was at James Emmett's office, which was across town, but there's a tunnel that leads from that house to the Emmett House, and it goes clear underground. Of course, it's bricked up, and I was like, that's a perfect place for me to have pictures taken. And in the office, everything was fine upstairs. The basement, the energy changed. And it was where the tunnel entrance was that goes right into this house. And it was just amazing and phenomenal, and you knew you weren't there by yourself. Across the street was James Emmett's home. And, like, I have Facebook pictures up there anyway. To make a long story short, the building caught on fire mysteriously. Like, no one was there. And I later found out that the firemen were not even local. Like, the people that saw the fire were not local people. And, of course, it was one of those below zero nights. So there are pictures or war pictures. I can't find them now. And, in fact, one of my workers at my job sent me the picture of the Emmett House that I'm about ready to talk about, but I've not been able to post it to Facebook yet. The building burnt to the ground, and there is a photograph, and I don't know if it was taken while the building was burning. I think it was, and there was a side entrance to the building facing Emmett Avenue, which is a main artery through the town, which is also 23 south and north, of a gentleman sitting on, like, the stoop, like, with this look on his face, like, what now? Like, what do I do now? And the place is going up in flames. And it is, I mean, it's burnt to the ground. It is nothing but bricks and mortar. And that picture, like, was up on Facebook. The Emmett House was on Facebook, and I've not been able to find anything on that. I don't know if she shut down the page, because right after I talked to you about it, now it looks like it's back up. But right after I talked to you about it, I started looking for it, and I couldn't find it. The only thing I'm finding now is Haunted Emmett House on Facebook, and that's all. That's all that's there. But she,
Oh, wow. She
has pictures posted of, like, everything. Then she puts up this post before she closed down the account, obviously, that said, if you have bricks, because apparently what they did was a ceremony, and they gave bricks to people. Because, I mean, this was a historical, monumental building.
Mm-hmm.
And she puts on Facebook, if any of you have bricks from the Emmett House and bad things are happening, if you're having bad dreams, if you're having bad luck, or if you're not having, like, basically there was stuff going on with people, she says, bring your bricks back. I've already returned mine. And I thought,
wow. Yeah.
So then the page just disappeared. And I still can't find it. I mean, I'm looking on Facebook right now as we speak, and I don't see it anywhere. And, I mean, she had the business page up. It was doing very well. It's heartbreaking to me because every time I go past there now, it's not so much now as it was when it – I mean, it took me a week and a half to even want to go into town because I just knew how lost. Like, you could just – when I would drive past, you just knew they were just lost. And that it was just this, where are we going to go? What now? Because it burnt to the ground. I mean, it's gone. All of it is gone. And
I would be interested. I don't know how you do this without being invasive, and I'm sure people would get riled up, but I would be interested in knowing what's going on in the near vicinity of where that house used to be, if any of those spirits just traveled, you know, to the next house over or the next business or whatever is around it, if they're now having strange things going on that weren't going on before the house burnt. Mythology
right.
states, and I don't know if this is true or not. I've heard several different arguments about this mythology that if a house contains spirits and it burns to the ground, that it releases those spirits and they are then free to go wherever they choose. I don't know if that's true or not. I probably won't know until I'm dead. But, because I intend to haunt a whole lot of people, those of you who's got on my list.
Yeah.
Watch out.
I'm right there with you.
But I'm very curious about that. What's going on in the area around it now, as opposed to what was going on before, because I bring up Smackover frequently now, but, you know, in Smackover, I swear there's more haunted stuff down there than there's not. And they seem to, those spirits seem to travel a bit. They don't seem to be settled in just one spot. I mean, each of the buildings we entered, there were five places we went, had particular spirits to that spot, but
right.
Some of the spirits that were seen in other places also bore some resemblance for the people that saw apparitions to the
mm-hmm.
spirits that appeared to be anchored. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have no idea what the – I know what the mythology is on that. I have no idea what the actuality is of it. But I'm seriously curious to find that out. If you ever happen to run across anybody that lives down there around them, just nonchalantly say, so,
mm-hmm.
any weird stuff going
on with
you?
I've wondered the same thing. I've wondered the same thing. There's actually only, I take that back. There's businesses down there, but there's some upstairs apartments in the older buildings. But no one has said anything. Like, I've not heard anything. And I travel into town probably about twice to three times a week at this point. But I've not heard anything of any type of activity course. Who knows if they would even say anything? Like,
yeah,
I understand that, you know, paranormal things are being more and more accepted, but we're in, like, the Bible Belt, and if you have any type of, typically, if you have any type of paranormal behavior or things going on in your home or whatever, the first and only explanation that's given is it's demonic. There's no such thing as ghosts. There's no such thing as wayward spirits. It's all demonic, and it's the devil. So if there was any activity, I doubt that anybody would say anything because, first of all, they wouldn't want to draw attention to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, they would not want people to think that they were, like, devil worshippers or that,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were being haunted by demons. And that whole persona is still very much alive and well in the area that I live in.
I believe somewhat down here, too, that this is where I have a difficult time getting into discussions with fundamentalists.
I say
that as a broad statement because every sect of the Protestant church has some sort of fundamentalism going on. So it doesn't matter what the church's name is.
Right.
But in discussing this with fundamentalists, including family members, because I come from a highly religious family, I have issues with that statement, there's no such thing as ghosts.
Yes.
Because I believe, let me be subversive again and open another can of worms. I believe that even it is biblical. There is, and forgive me because off the top of my head I don't remember the exact verse or where it's from, but I believe that it's, from Revelations, where it talks about the dead in Christ shall rise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the Christians are just rising there at the end of time, where the heck were they before then?
Exactly.
Not trying to be a smart aleck, but I mean,
I
seriously, where were they?
I know.
And there's also the statement made in the Bible that judgment day is at the end. At the end of our
right.
lives, but we will all be judged at one time. So where are we before then? So I believe that there is a biblical foothold for ghosts and ghost activity. Of course,
well, there's even
I believe a lot of weird
of
stuff.
Like ghostly, like ghostly apparitions in the Bible. Like, if you really, and see, here I go. Welcome me.
Join me in my subversion.
Here I go. I'm climbing up on my soapbox and waiting for the noose to fall. I just totally believe, and I had this conversation the other day, when you say that something is not possible, you are boxing what you believe to be God in. And that's not what Christians are raised to believe. You're raised to believe that with God all things are possible. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So why are you limiting that? Why are you saying, well, that isn't possible? I mean, you're talking to somebody that has some pretty wild belief systems. I'm a Bigfoot hunter. Do I believe he exists? Absolutely. Why wouldn't I? If it's possible, then why is it not probable? And
right.
people will look at me like,
I agree
you
with
are.
That. I agree with that.
And I don't think, like, this is the same person who on Friday nights when I'm not on Blog Talk Radio and am watching Ancient Aliens, people can think that I am insane because I don't share this with just anybody, although I'm sharing it with the entire world now.
just a couple million.
I don't,
that's all.
Like, you know, no big deal. I don't talk about this because people are like, oh, my God, you're going to hell. And I'm sorry, I don't believe that. I don't have that kind of conviction because I don't box my Creator in. If it is true that with God or Creator or with Spirit or whatever you want to call it, if that all things are possible, quit boxing him in.
Yeah.
Quit making it impossible for him to reveal himself in your life in whatever way he chooses. Even if it's
right.
an unconventional means, stop it. Stop
well,
limiting
listen.
What he can do.
This is, when people start with the it's not possible crap, and it's a load of crap. I don't care if people don't agree with me or not. It is absolutely a load of crap. And here's why. Here's why it's a load of crap. Historically speaking, I don't know if you guys have been watching that new show, Cosmos, but if you haven't, you need to because, holy cow, it's a good show. One of the best I've seen in a long time. Very interesting. The CGI is amazing. It feels like you're out there in space with them. Anyhow, I just watched an episode of that. You know, ancient man saw a comet in the sky, and the comet meant that bad was coming. Every time it meant that there was different cultures had different beliefs. Some believed it meant famine. Some believe it meant flood. Some believed it meant, you know, disease, war, whatever. But if there was a comet in the sky, that was a bad thing.
Right.
They used to believe that the earth was flat. They
yes.
used to believe that the new world, which is now was part of the whole world, didn't exist. They used
yep.
to believe that if you went far enough into the ocean on a ship, you would fall off the edge of the planet. We used to believe a lot of stuff that was crap.
Yes.
So although we are evolving as a species, we are evolving and we are becoming more and more intelligent, and we are finding out new things all the time. I just saw not too long ago an article that was talking about I cannot remember the number, but it was a ghastly amount of Earth-type planets, M-class planets, that they have found.
Yes, I saw that.
That have potential for life, and not like some silicon life or something, actual carbon-based life forms, just like the life forms you find on this planet. And you know what? 100 years ago, that was impossible. 100 years ago,
yes.
we would never touch the moon. 100 years ago, there would have never been a black president. There's a lot of things that were impossible even 100 years ago. So when people start
exactly.
pulling out, oh, anything is possible. Anything is, you
yes.
never know what's going to happen. We could be drinking our coffee in the morning and 10 million aliens could touch down and say, hey, how you doing? We're here to take over. I hope that doesn't happen. So I don't know how far internet radio goes, but if you're coming, just be nice, okay?
Yeah, exactly. We believe, so leave us open. Be nice to us because we've advocated for you. I just don't, like, my struggle has always been science versus Bible because
mm-hmm.
they have been completely at odds with one another for as long as I can remember. And I think that it is absolutely wonderful that science is starting to prove or disprove theories and theological study from the Bible. They're able to give you scientific explanations for the parting of the Red Sea. They're able to give you scientific explanations for the Star of Bethlehem. They're starting, and I know it pisses the Christian community off, and I'm really sorry, but that's what scientists are doing. They're trying to prove or disprove what has been published in a set of documents that was written thousands of years after Jesus Christ walked the earth. And it was written in a very different time period than what we live in right now. And I am not debunking the Bible. So all of the people that would like to hang me at this point, I am not debunking the Bible. I'm saying it's the job of science to prove or disprove various facets of our life. If we did not have science, we would not have cures for major life-threatening, debilitating diseases. That same science is helping us evolve as an overall species, is my belief. And if you do not have progress, what are you doing? You're going backward. This soapbox is really high, Willow.
Be careful up there. No, I'm just playing.
I know. I'm sorry.
Here's what I believe. Concerning, and you are exactly right. Science and religion have been at odds since science came into being. So I agree with you 100% there. However, my personal belief is that there is room. Religion is faith-based. Science is fact-based. This is in my head.
Right.
I'm just talking what I think and how I feel. So anybody that doesn't agree with me, I'm not going to be upset with you for not agreeing with me, because each of you are entitled to your very own opinion and your own belief system. However, I feel like there is room for both of them together. You know, when my little girl,
Absolutely. Well,
she's not a little girl anymore. She's a grown woman now with kids of her own. But when she was a little girl, she was about 7. We were in the car. No, I think she might have been about 10. We were in the car. We were on our way up to Pettigene Mountain. And she was talking about, they were learning about the dinosaurs in school. And she said to me, "Mom, I don't understand." She says, "You know, we're learning about all these different dinosaurs, and they have bones, and that you can see that they were real. But then we go to church, and they don't want to talk about that." Because at that time, we were avid churchgoers. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. She says, "I don't understand which one is true." And I said, "They're both true."
Mm-hmm.
She said, "What do you mean? What do you mean they're both true?" I said, "Listen, it has been established that this world is hundreds of millions of years old. I don't know the exact count, never bothered to check it out, but it's been here for a long time. It is scientific proof that dinosaurs existed. A multitude of different species throughout the different time periods. That is fact. Just because it doesn't talk about it in the Bible doesn't mean they weren't there. It just meant it wasn't the information that was important to know. When you learn how to drive a car, they're not going to teach you how to run a microwave, because that does not help you drive a car. In the same token, if you go to work somewhere like McDonald's, they're not going to teach you how to do accounting like you would do if you were working in an office, because it does not help you make cheeseburgers and french fries. So just because it's not there doesn't mean it's not true. And I believe that wholeheartedly, that there's room for both. I think people in general, sometimes I use the term sheeple. I probably shouldn't. But I think that people in general need to learn to think for themselves. You know, my mother told me several years ago, I was in my 20s. I was in my mid-20s. You know, at the time I thought she was a nutcase, and now she's gone, and I so wish that I had really listened to what she had to say. It wasn't that I didn't listen to her. I was like any other 25-year-old girl and just kind of discounted. Oh, you know, Mom's a little flaky, but she's a wonderful person. But she said to me, "There, no man has original thought." And I said, "What?" She says, "There's no such thing as original thought in this world anymore, because everything that you believe and you think is a product of how you were raised, the environment you've been in, and the information that you have allowed yourself to be subjected to. So to have a truly original thought, you would have literally had to have no upbringing whatsoever." and been raised right. on your own and influenced by no one, which is impossible, right. you know.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, at the time I really thought, wow, my mom is a nutcase, but I love her, but she's a nutcase. But now that I'm older and I think about that, and it is so true. We don't know. We have to go. The faith has to be what feels right. What do we believe in our heart of hearts?
Right.
What touches
exactly.
you? What
and I honestly don't
so
believe
deeply.
It's the same. I don't believe it's the same for every person. I believe
no,
that's
I
why
don't think it
we.
Is either.
That's why we're individuals. Is because what feels right to me may not feel right to you, and what feels right to you may not feel right to someone else. That's why, like. When I was struggling to kind of find myself, because I went full-fledged atheist for probably about three, it probably was even longer than that, probably from 2004 to maybe 2011. Like, I believed in nothing. I believed in absolutely nothing. So for me to come to terms with another type of spiritual belief system, that was a struggle for me because I was also raised in the fundamentalist church. I was also raised to believe that there was absolutely no other way to believe other than what was taught within the church walls. And there were nights when I would lay awake panicked because I thought, if I die, I'm going to hell. Like, if I die, this is it, or there's nothing after this. And what really hit me the hardest was when my aunt passed away, because that was a struggle for me, because I was not spiritually anywhere. I was an atheist. I didn't believe in anything. And when she died, I can say that was the hardest death that I've had to process, because I've lost both my grandparents, a very close uncle. I mean, there are people in my life that I've loved, and they've died.
Mm-hmm.
And you always had that hope, well, I'm going to see them again because I'm going to go to heaven. Well, when she died, I didn't have that hope anymore. And it just about drove me into insanity. And I thought, I'm going to have to go on antidepressants, because I would, like, cry for no reason whatsoever. A commercial would make me cry. And
oh,
it was this,
well, I can understand. That's because that's true loss. If there's no hope, if there's no hope at all, then it is truly over. I mean, you know, that is goodbye, and a goodbye forever is a very hard thing to do.
And,
I would think.
And it was awful. Awful. It was awful. And I thought, there is no coming out of this. Like, and it was, as my chiropractor, I went to him because he's also a holistic physician, and I was like, man, I got to have some help. I don't want to go on chemicals. I needed help, and he ended up, we did like a vitamin regimen and a supplement. And, I mean, it did help. It helped the body.
Mm-hmm.
But the spirit was still broken. And he wrote a spectacular book. And I talk about it all the time on my YouTube series. And it's called Soul Proof. And within the introduction to that book, I was sobbing. And what I learned from that whole experience was, because I had graduated with my master's degree, the only way to get through to me was to educate me. And I know, as sure as I'm sitting here, that I was supposed to pick up that book and I was supposed to read it, because that was the only way the Creator could get through to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he used whatever means necessary to get through to me personally. He knew what to use to get to me. And when I read that book, my whole life changed. Like, when I say that, that's not an exaggeration. My entire life, thought process, spirit, everything changed. And I learned so much and understood so much by reading just that small book compared to years of trying to digest the Bible.
Yeah.
And everything made sense at that point. So I sincerely believe that the Creator, God, whatever you call, whatever you want to call the deity that is the first and foremost in your life, that spirit will use whatever it knows is going to reach your heart. And it is your job to figure out what it means. Like when the Bible says we have to, basically we have to read and interpret on our own. Like, it sincerely means that. Here's the information that's presented, but you have to use that spiritual self that is underneath all of that to discern what it is that's being tried to, what it is that's being told to you.
Yeah.
Now that I've preached my sermon.
I agree with that. I agree with that. I don't know. I wish that, I'm saying this knowing that more and more people are opening up all the time. More and more people are opening their minds, broadening their horizons, looking into different things, taking chances and having adventures. And that's wonderful. I wish more people would do it. I wish more people would stop mucking around in the hole they're in and would start checking out what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
You know, not just world events, because that in itself people need to be checking out. People need to be waking up and looking around and saying, hey, this is not cool. We can't let this happen. But even more so than that, I think spiritually, not as a nation, as a planet, people need to start connecting. And they need to start realizing that we're all in this together, because we are all in this together. I don't care what anyone says. I have a friend that I love him, but he drives me crazy. He's very into the whole white thing, and that it's just like, dude, get a clue.
Yes.
We can't talk about that because we fight like cats and dogs when that starts, that conversation starts. But we are all in this together. Everyone is necessary. Everyone, I believe, absolutely every person on this planet has a purpose, that they are here for a reason. No matter how small it is, they're here for a reason. And when people start feeling that connection with each other, plugging into the us of us, because it is us. Not me and you, it's not him and her, it's us. When they start plugging into that, things will change, and we will make a difference. And we're never going to have, because there's always going to be bad guys, and there's always going to be evil. We're never going to have a utopian society. It's impossible.
No.
But we could have a lot better than what we have if people would learn to plug into the us of humanity.
And quit dividing, like, just because I don't believe the same as somebody else, that does not make me a bad person or evil. And I know that that's, like, rampant everywhere. And people get really mad if you are not, like, on their perceived same page. And one of the things that really, like, hurts me to see is I have a very good friend who is a homosexual male. And he was afraid to tell me that. Like, for 10 years, he kept that from me. And I thought, Jesus, am I that critical? And it wasn't that. It was, I mean, we've grown up together since the second grade. And he was afraid to tell me. And I said, you know, I will never judge you, ever. Why would you think that? And it was because of how we were all raised. And I said, I will never judge you. First of all, my feeling is that, and I really came to this understanding once I had the epiphany in like 2011, 2012. We are souls wrapped in skin. That is all we are. We are balls of light and souls wrapped in flesh. And we travel not only through this current experience, but through past experiences. So, again, you're boxing it in by saying you're a certain gender. That's not fair, because a soul is open to love whatever other soul is out there, whether it's male or female. So the one thing that I love him with all my heart. He is my best, he's my oldest friend. And I would never judge anybody based on the color of their skin, their sexual preference. And I think when you do that, you are not doing the us concept. You are hurting society as a whole.
I agree.
I mean, that is like the worst form of bigotry there ever was. Quit thumping the Bible in their face and accept them for who they are, because they aren't just about this human experience. They're pulling off of all those past experiences of who they were before. And that's another thing that, like, really pisses people off when you start talking about reincarnation. Because my son is actually learning about that in school. And,
oh, really?
Oh, yes. They're teaching, like, for example, on my printer right now, I pulled these out of his book bag because I thought, I'm going to sit down and read these. Hinduism, Buddhism, and Judaism. This came from his school. And I say, go for it. And most people would be so mad that they are teaching other cultures of religion in the public school.
This is where I think I disagree with that. Not the teaching of that, but the people who disagree with it. I disagree with them, because knowledge is power, period.
That's right.
Knowledge is power. Anybody who says that that's a crock doesn't know what they're talking about. The more you learn and the more you know, the more well-rounded of a person you'll be. And we called this episode the right episode with getting personal, because we really got off the paranormal subject. But we're getting
what
personal.
Paranormal, so.
I think that they should be, if you can't teach one without teaching another. And there
right.
are many arguments about separation of church and state, and that no religion should be taught in school whatsoever. I have to disagree with that, because, and I please don't take offense to this, because I'm not gearing this towards you. I have said repeatedly that I feel sorry, and I do. I feel sorry for people that are atheists and do not believe in anything at all. Because without the hope, that's the one thing that believing in God is what I call him, but God, a higher power, whatever you want to call it, I don't care if you call it a goddess, whatever. If you don't believe in anything at all, there's no hope. And if there's no hope, ever, when life gets rough, and people, come on, we all know how rough life can get. When life gets
right.
rough, where's the, and there's no hope, what's the point?
Exactly.
And
my
children,
think, yeah, I completely agree.
Children need to be able, they need to have the opportunity to see other people's thoughts and ideas and how they think and how they believe, because if they're raised in a home where there's atheism and there's no hope, you know, it feels like giving them a leg up. And I know there's a multitude of people who would argue it is not our business, but you know what it is,
right.
'Cause it takes a village to raise a child. That is one of the truest statements ever made. We don't raise our children all on our own. Many people, I'm sure, out there right now that could say, you know, my kid has this friend or that friend that's a bad influence and blah, blah, blah. And you get upset because your kids loves that friend, but they are a bad influence, which is why you have to surround them with more people that are good influences. Because
right.
Anyone that's got children over the age of 10 knows that they're going to do what they want to do. Because
yes.
They are. Don't kid yourself into thinking. I've raised 7 kids. Don't kid yourself into thinking that your children are going to do exactly what you tell them to. Because I promise you, they're not.
You're going to be
disappointed. And when they get to be 18, they're really not.
Yeah, you're going to be disappointed.
Some people get lucky. Some people get lucky and they have kids that really mind like that. I have not had that kind of luck. I'm still hoping that someday, some of them, I've noticed that there's something about the age of 25. For some reason, when a kid hits 25, all of a sudden their mom gets smarter. So,
well, you know that the brain doesn't fully develop until like the late 20s. That's why we make all these dumb ass decisions, like up until like our late 20s. Because it sincerely takes the brain up until your late 20s to fully develop. That is a scientific fact. So that explains why I've made all the idiot decisions that I have made from birth to my late 20s. Like when I finally decided to get it together, it was my late 20s.
So it wasn't necessarily, because I was in my mid-20s when I finally grabbed the bull by the horns and said, okay, let's do this thing called life. let's get on.
It's not. There's some scientific evidence to say that there's a reason why we're complete dumbasses up until that point.
If my parents can hear me, wherever they are out there in the cosmos, it wasn't my fault. It was a physiological issue. I did the best I could with that issue. Oh, my heavens.
It's true. Well, trust me. I took cognitive psychology. I know.
Well, that's great information to have.
Psychology.
I feel a lot better about many circumstances that I will never air in public or private.
I know, it makes you feel better about yourself, doesn't it?
It does.
It always did me. I was like, see, there's a reason why I was so stupid and made all those bad decisions.
Let's try to bring this back to some paranormal, just in case the listeners are going, what the heck is going on the shelf? Which, if you're a regular listener, you know by now that nothing ever goes as planned on this show, so what in the heck were you expecting? I want to know for you, because I know for me, and I've talked about it in my haunted books, when I really started really noticing the paranormal influences in my life, the spirits and entities, ghosts. At roughly what age for you did it start having an impact on your life where you were like, okay, something's going on here. What is this?
Probably about age 3, 4, something like that.
Oh, so you were really young.
The very first paranormal experience, and I've also discussed this on YouTube as well. I did a whole entire series on this whole topic, and it's called Bumps in the Night, and it was like a 10-week series. But the very first paranormal experience that I had, I would say at least 3 or 4, and it was of an old woman who I associated as being a witch, because of the way she looked.
Oh. Okay, I remember this now.
Remember this? Yes.
Yes, well, go ahead and tell everybody, because I remember it doesn't mean you've told them.
I thought she was a witch, because if that's your frame of reference as a child, you associate what you know with what you see.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked like a witch to me. But I will tell you this. I was going through old photographs of my dad, and my great-grandmother was who I saw. Because I saw the picture of her, and I was like, oh, my God, that's the woman.
Oh, wow.
And I found them like 3 weeks ago. I think I went down to my parents' house and was looking through photographs, and I was like, who is this person? And it's my great-grandmother. And I already had had a reading last October saying that the old woman was a relative. So I knew that at that age, of course, I thought, what in God's name is this? Like, she would stand at the end of my bed. And we had trundle beds. And it scared me to death. Like, there was a closet at the end of my trundle bed that I knew not to go in. Like,
mm-hmm.
I knew not to go in. And I would go hide in my other closet all the time, and I still got a little bit creeped out over there, but I would never go to the one at the end of my bed. And I believed that she lived in there because she would always come out of that door.
Now that you're older, do you think that she was just watching over you?
Yes. Now, she scared me to death as a child. But I associated her with the nightmares that I had. Like, and I think that's why I had such a negative view of her up until last year, was because I saw her, okay, then I had bad dreams. So, and the dreams, she was never in the dreams. It was always, the dreams were very sinister, and there were all these hooded individuals, and I look at it now, and I'm thinking, God, what was wrong with me? Like, I would call them no-eyed rabbits, because they had horns, and their eyes were this dull, I mean, like if you cut an onion open and you see the rings, that's what I saw staring back at me. And they were surrounding me, and there was a fire in the middle, and they would constantly throw me into the fire. Now that I'm older and have been able to, like, meditate and look back into my past lives, I know where that comes from, and I know what that is about. And it was actually a past life memory that I had, because as nuts as this sounds, I was involved with the Salem witch trials. And so now I understand all that. As a kid, you're just like, these nightmares. Like, I was sick all the time as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So it started for me when I was a toddler. That house, I don't know that that house was haunted anymore. When I originally did the YouTube series, I was completely in a belief that that house was haunted, but I don't think it had anything to do with that house now. But when did it start for you?
Well, I was just talking to my cousin. I was going to say a couple of weeks ago, but honestly, it's been like 2 or 3 months ago. I'm really bad with time differentiation because it just all kind of flows together. But I was talking to my cousin, and we were discussing, she had just purchased the haunted books, and she made the comment to me, I always loved your ghost stories. And I said, really? Because, I mean, we hung out together as children a lot. She'd come spend the night with me, or I'd go spend the night with her. And I think she's like 3 years younger than I am. She's pretty close to my age. I said, you always loved my ghost stories. And she said, yeah. She says, don't you remember laying in the basement at night when I'd stay the night? And I'll have to tell you, it's not like I just hang out in a dank, dark basement as a child. I wasn't that creepy. We had a partially finished basement, and that was before the time of central air. So we slept in the basement in the summer because it was cooler down there. And we had it set up, Mom had it set up with like a bedroom down there, so we'd sleep down there with the fan so we didn't lay upstairs and sweat to death all night. And she said, don't you remember laying in the basement and you telling me about the doll? And when she brought that up, it came back to me in just like a wave, and I remembered the terror of what happened down there and how scared I was. I had totally forgotten about it. And she thought I was telling her stories, but I mean, at the time, this I was like 10, probably. I know I wasn't a teenager. But a lot, the more we talked, because she said she still remembers to this day the things that I told her about ghosts, and I didn't remember until she told me those circumstances anymore. But there was this incident. I had this doll that my sister had given me. It was almost as tall as I was when I got it. So I'm guessing I was probably 4 or 5 years old. They don't make them that big now. Now they make them a little smaller. But this was a very tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed doll that you could dress in real clothes. And I,
yes,
it was exactly the size of me because
I had
I
one.
Could put it,
I know what you're talking about.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
and,
I had one.
Like I told you, we slept in the basement during the summer. And the first summer this happened, well, it was the only summer that this particular incident went on, and I'll tell you why at the end of the story, but my brother and I were sleeping down there. I didn't want to sleep down there by myself. I was just a little kid. I was scared to sleep down there all by myself, so my brother slept down there with me, and I had the doll. I'd been playing with it, you know, good part of the evening, and I sat it beside the bed, and we went to sleep. And we slept in the same bed, and there was nothing weird going on. He was my brother. Anyhow,
right.
We went to bed. I went to sleep, and I started hearing this noise. Like, and I swear to you, this is true. I'm not making this up. And it was like something scraping on the floor. It woke me up. And it scared me, so I, you know, shoved on my brother and said, what is that? What is that? Get up, get up. And he got up and he turned on the light because he wasn't scared of nothing. And my doll that had been sitting beside my bed was laying on the floor at the foot of the bed. Now, we did not have inside pets. There was no dog in the house that could have grabbed it. There was no cat, nothing. And I know where I put the doll when I went to sleep. And I saw that doll there, and it scared the crap out of me. So I made my brother take my doll and go put it in the root cellar. We called it the root cellar. It was actually a separate room in the basement that had a door that shut it off, and it had shelves all the way up on both sides, and it was where Mom put all the canned goods because she was real big on, we lived on a farm, she was real big on canning any kind of vegetable you can imagine. It was in a jar on a shelf in that room. So I made him go put it in the root cellar. And because I was scared. I thought the doll was coming to life when I went to sleep. And we went back to bed. And in the morning, when I woke up, the doll was sitting outside the root cellar, sitting with its legs out in front of it, which, you know, were the knees didn't bend or anything. We didn't have that kind of great technology back then. It's just sitting there with just staring at us. And I was a million kinds of freaked out, man. I was scared to death. So I put that doll very quickly. I think I kind of tossed it back in the root cellar, shut the door, and went upstairs. And I would not sleep in the basement, nor would I play with the doll again. Mom would go down and she would clean and pick up and whatever. And the next thing I know, that doll would be back in my room. And I promise you this, the moment I found it in my room, it went right back down in the root cellar.
Oh, my gosh. That is very freaky.
Finally, I gave it to my niece because wasn't that horrible?
Here,
give it to your baby niece. I think the doll is on it. Here, you take it. I gave it to her.
Hot potato.
And Yeah. Now she never had that issue. It wasn't the doll. At the time, I thought it was, and I was absolutely terrified of it. There was also something else about that basement. Every time I went down there, and I had to go down there to take my laundry down there. That was where the washer and dryer was. When I was coming back up the stairs, I always felt like someone was following me. Always. Uh-huh. Every blessed time. So I would hit the third stair and run all the way to the uh-huh. top of the stairs, get out and slam the door uh-huh. to stop whatever it was from coming out after me. I couldn't even uh-huh. look behind me because I was absolutely petrified. And this uh-huh. was not, like I said, it wasn't a dank, old, dirty, spiderweb-infested basement. It was partially finished. It was very clean. Mom kept everything meticulously clean, even the basement. There was a whole kitchen down there and dining room tables and chairs and, you know, like I said, a partial bedroom and some living room furniture. And it was like part of the house.
A livable area. Yeah.
Yes. So it should not have been terrifying to me, but it was. And I had forgotten all about that until my cousin brought it up. And then she mm-hmm. told me, you know, some more things that I told her as we got older that I honestly, I don't know whether I just blocked them out. I just didn't remember them mm-hmm. until she brought them up, and then I was like, oh, wow. And she said, you mean those weren't stories? Because I've always thought you were just telling me stories. I said, no.
No.
I remember that clearly. I was scared to death. So mm-hmm. it was. I was not super young, but I was fairly young. But mm-hmm. I don't know. There's some strange things about my youth. Like, I remember my grandfather. And according to my family, my mother's father died right before I turned 2 years old. Mm-hmm. But I clearly remember him. I remember him talking to me. I remember him tickling me, teasing me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the way his nose wrinkled when he laughed and the way his mm-hmm. glasses moved up and down. I shouldn't be able to remember that if I was only, you know, somewhere between 18 months and 2 years old.
Right.
That's incredibly unusual. And anybody that knows me well knows that my memory stinks. I am lucky if I remember my own name some days. So I wonder now if maybe the memory of him is so strong because he didn't actually leave after he left.
Probably
not. You know what I mean? Because I remember
not.
Things. And my sister, I've had long talks with my oldest sister, and she'll say, there's no way you can remember that, but I do.
Uh-huh.
So it could have started, but, you know, there's no proof there. I mean, a memory does not proof make. But
right.
It could have started young, but the scary stuff started probably, I would say, 10 years old, 9 or 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrified of it. And I was the first several houses that I lived in, not the first apartment, I wasn't scared of that ghost.
Mm-hmm.
I always laugh when people say, well, tell me some of the stuff that happened to you. And I'm always wanting to say, well, here, just read this. It's easier than telling all the stories. It's all in Haunted. One through four, read them, then you'll know it. But that one didn't scare me, but there were several that did until I came to the realization, and it honestly wasn't until I moved down here, because I promise you, the house that I moved into here, I made sure. I walked that house alone. I had my husband take the landlord out into the driveway so I was completely alone and
mm-hmm.
opened up just as wide as I could. And there was not a blessed thing in that house
mm-hmm.
until 6 months after
mm-hmm.
I moved into it. So I know it wasn't haunted. And it was at that point when the paranormal stuff started picking up again that I came to the conclusion, okay, nobody lives
it's
in,
not,
you know.
Yeah. It's me.
Haunted houses. It's me. It cracks me up because every so often I'll get a review, and it's usually a bad one. And they'll say, you know, something along the lines of this crazy woman thinks that every house she lives in is haunted. And which that, it does sound like that because that was where I was in that was the frame of mind I had. So for those of you that might have read it and think that, no, I don't believe that anymore. That's what I believed at the time. And yes, I am crazy. Deal with it. I don't profess to be. I don't profess to be non-crazy. I'm just not insane. There's a difference.
There you go. There you go.
My goodness. Well, it is 10:15. We were only going to do an hour show tonight, but we have a hard time doing that, I guess. Before we put two women that like to talk about paranormal on the air together, and you've got trouble. Tracy, before we go, because we generally have guests and we don't really get to talk about our books as well, because there's some people who probably don't even realize that we're both authors. Well,
more than likely, you're
they
right.
May not realize you're an author because I'm always talking about haunted. But I want you to tell everybody a little bit about the books that you have, their titles, what they're about, and where they can find them.
Okay. The first book is called Between Worlds, The Fine Line, and it is published by PDMI Publishing LLC, a very small independent press out of Alabama. And that book is about ghosts and demons. It actually involves a couple, Robin Hillard and Matthew Gregory. Robin is a social worker in the field of child welfare, ironically. And no, I did not pattern her character off of myself. Everyone always asks me
that. That sounds familiar.
a lot of the things that she does is very similar to the way I do things and the way I think. However, she has some pretty traumatic events that happened to her that have never happened to me. She's been through quite a lot, and she goes through quite a lot in the book. She is a spiritualist raised from the fundamentalist point of view. She meets this hunky doctor who looks like Robert Downey Jr. And
ooh.
Oh, yeah.
I like him already.
Very skeptical. He's a doctor. I mean, he's an ER doctor. They meet in the ER because she twists her ankle. And, like, his sparks fly. It's destiny. And they end up falling in love with one another. They end up getting married. And he has his eye on this house in southwestern Ohio that's, like, decrepit and needs completely redone. And he proposes to her there at the property and says, well, guess what, I've bought it, and it's ours. So they renovate this house, and there's a lot of things that start happening. She goes to, like, measure the windows and the blinds, and the door slams, and it's like a spiral from there. You've got various different things that start happening, and he has a daughter who is Robin's stepdaughter. Her name is Olivia. And she begins talking to a child in her room. And she can relay to her father intimate details of Matt and Robin's time together when Olivia has not been present. So that is when he starts really thinking that there's something to what's going on in the house. Robin ends up having some pretty major experiences, visions. She ends up getting held down. She ends up getting physically harmed. And eventually they have to have investigators come in and look at the house. And they they do a paranormal investigation and find that there's not only two human spirits that live there, but there's also a demon that lives there. I'm not going to get into a lot more of it because I want people to read the book.
Right. Sounds awesome.
It does have, like, it has a happy ending. I'm not one of those people that, like, leaves you hanging off of a cliff. And this book is the first of a series. So I'm working on the second book in that series. Right now I was actually working on it this evening. And that book right there, because I didn't get a whole lot of reviews on that book, and like it's a springboard into the second book in the series, which gets much, much more in-depth. So it was kind of like a framework of here's all the characters and here's who you're going to see in the next book. The second book that I've written, it's called Eidolon: Visions of the Undone. And it has won a Reviewer's Choice Award. And from the friends of mine that have... The friends of mine who have read that book said that it's almost like they're reading it like two different people have written these books. The second... Eidolon is about a serial killer. And he is abducting college-age women who are very strong-willed individuals. And this is the part that freaks people out, and he buries them alive. However, with that being said, for all the people out there that suffocate when you think about that, there's only two explicit scenes in the book that depict someone's point of view as they are buried alive, and it's very brief. So don't not want to read the book because of that. It's not suffocating at all. It is very, what was it that my friend said? It's very high voltage and high anxiety, but it's not to the point where you're like, oh my God, I can't breathe. It keeps you on the edge of your seat because you never know what is coming next. Lauren Harris is a forensic psychologist who works for the state of Ohio police, and then she also contracts with the FBI. And they contact her, the Ohio State Police contacts her, I believe it's them first, to analyze these crime scenes. And the dude, like, that's doing all this, he crosses jurisdictional lines, so that involves the FBI. And she meets Nicholas Bennett, who is the director of the Southwestern FBI field office in Ohio. And he is a real prick to her at first. And she is not very nice to him either. And they end up teaming up to try and solve this crime. And in doing so, they end up falling in love with one another. And the body count just keeps piling up, and they can't get a break. Well, the deal with her is, her gift is she's an empath, and she can feel and see what the victims are feeling and seeing. But she only gets it in pieces. And her job is to present a scientific profile without using her ability, which is a challenge for her.
Oh, but I would bet.
That book also ends happily ever after.
Except for the dead
people.
Except for
the dead.
Sorry.
But they get justice in the end. They get justice in the end. That's what her job is. Like, it even says in the synopsis that her job is to give a voice to the dead, like, what her job is. So she, like, and the book trailer, book trailers take me forever to make, but that's what her job is to give voice to those that can't speak anymore, and to bring peace to them and to their families. But she's been through quite a lot. She was not so much orphaned, but her parents were murdered when she was 12. And her family kind of had to take her in and raise her. But if I had to pick any character in a book that I've written so far that I would want to pattern my life off of or be, it would be her. She is one strong woman and very intelligent, very smart, very scientific, but she has this other side of herself that she uses to try and solve these crimes. Those two characters are going to be an integral part of book number 2 in the Between Worlds series. So that's my, there's my deal.
It sounds wonderful. They both sound absolutely right up my alley. I love that kind of stuff. I do. Especially.
So let's talk about your books. How many do you have published?
I think there's like 16 or 17. I have to recount them. I can't keep count. That's including like the print volume for like Oceans of Red is my dystopian. It's a series. It's a post-apocalyptic series. So there's, you know, book 1, Rise of the Demons, book 2, Demon Evolution, and book 3, Demon Apocalypse. And then they're all three combined in one print novel because they're novellas. That's
mm-hmm.
Demon Revolution. And then I have my Haunted series, which is all my true ghost stories. Well, not all of them. There's a bunch of stories I haven't put in there yet, which is why there will be a Haunted
mm-hmm.
5. But there's also ghost stories from other people as well. People that I know well that have told me their stories, I went ahead and wrote them and so that they could tell their story. And then there's my Ghost
mm-hmm.
Diary series. That's fiction. Ghost Diaries is a lead-up for a whole new series that's going to open up next year called Taya Ford's Paranormal Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lead-in to that, and it's case files that Taya will be using
mm-hmm.
To do some paranormal investigating and get to the bottom of some crazy stuff that's going on in her life. And then I have my Dark Gifts series. I have Birthright and Inheritance. Those are the two
mm-hmm.
full-length novels. And then there's the Dark Gifts Companions, which are short stories, Afterlife and Bloodstone. Those came about because fans of Birthright and Inheritance were sending me messages saying, hey, I want to know more about this, and how did Angie meet William exactly? And so I thought,
mm-hmm.
you know what, I'm going to give them what they're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all getting brand new, shiny new covers. Birthright and Inheritance already has theirs. Afterlife is coming like super soon, and so is Bloodstones. And then I've got
mm-hmm.
A Higher Calling, which is part of a series, and the second in that is Paladin, and that will be releasing hopefully within the next month. It's my fault it's not out yet because I just have not had the kind of time I needed to write. A Higher Calling is an adult read. So if any of my YA people are listening, A Higher Calling is completely different than
mm-hmm.
the other YA fiction books. It's violent, it's vicious, it is not, there's no sweetness. Of course, most of my books are pretty violent. I get slammed on a regular basis for the gruesome way that I kill people, but hey, it's therapy for me. I can't help it. You know that old saying, if you tick off a writer, you're going to end up dying in one of their books.
There you go.
That particular series is the one where I've killed off everybody that got on my bad side. Well, not everybody.
That's
They'll be
great.
Dying in Paladin.
That's great.
Are my series, and many of them are in print. Shortly, most of them will be in print. I'm working on getting that all done with everything else. And for any authors that are listening, please check out Willow's Indie Book Services. It is not a publishing company. It's just a compiled list of people who offer services, reputable service providers for people who are self-publishing. I'm even on there because I do formatting for other folks for their books that they're self-publishing. So please go check that out if you're looking for a cover designer or an editor or another formatter. There's PR people on there, bloggers. You name it, it's on that website, and it's Willow's and eBook Services at Weebly.com. I'm particularly proud of that site because, and I'm adding more people all the time to the list. There's so many sharks in the self-publishing industry that will swoop in, take your money, and give you shoddy, dodgy product in return, and then you're out even more money because you got to pay somebody else to fix what they screwed up. This is my way of trying to give back to the indie community by endorsing these folks and saying, look, they're not going to rip you off. Because they're not, the people on that list aren't going to rip you off. I've worked with almost all of them on one project or another. So in some way, shape, or form, I've worked with them. And they're great, great people. And that's it. That's all my monstrosity.
So, I think that's wonderful.
Wait, it's 10:31 p.m. So we can either end the show or we can take some calls. For those of you that are listening, if you want to call in and tell your ghost story, the number is 714-242-5259. Or you don't have to tell a ghost story. You can call in and ask a question, whatever you want to do. We'll talk for just a couple more minutes, and if we don't get any calls, then we'll be saying see you later, bye. But call in. That's
what we're here for.
That's why we're here. It was really nice getting to just talk to you, Tracy. I love having guests. I love having guests, but it was nice to really just get to talk to you. And I guess now people have a good idea of what goes on when we're on the phone together, not on air.
we won't go there.
That was a fairly typical conversation, the less colorful language, I think, than we use in private. But
yes, you know, they're very true.
Darned FCC rules and stuff. So, it was nice getting to get personal. We have, listen, while we're killing a little time here, we've got a couple of shows coming up in April that I want to tell everybody about. I'm flipping over here on the computer to my calendar. I was going to say real quick, but unfortunately my computer's not doing anything real quick tonight. I've been having some serious PC issues. I'd love to blame it on ghosts, but unfortunately it's just an old computer.
April 11th. I understand.
April 11th, we will have our regular, 9 p.m. Central show, 10 p.m. Eastern. And our guest is going to be Alicia Sparks. She is an author, and she is also a ghost investigator. And she's going to come on and talk about her ghost investigations. And then April the 25th, we have Isabel Kate. I hope I'm saying her name right. It's Isabel Kate, and she is also an author. She's from the UK, so she's calling us from across the pond. And she's going to come on. She does tarot card readings, and she has a lot of experience with the paranormal. Really interesting lady. And she's going to do a reading for me, I believe, while we're on air. So I'm really excited about that because I haven't had one of those in a long, long time. So both shows should be just really interesting. And if you're in the area, tune in and check them out. And I guess we're not getting a caller, so we're going to go ahead and say goodbye. I want to thank you for tuning in from the World of Ink Network. and from the Paranormal Hour and from me and Trace, everybody have a good evening and tune in again April 11th because we'll be here. Bye.
Good night, everybody.